Welcome to What If, So What, the podcast where we ask what's possible with digital and figure out how to make it real in your business. I'm Jim Hertzfeld.
And I'm Kim Williams-Chopek.
We're part of Perficient's digital strategy team. And today we'll ask, what if, so what, and most importantly, now what? There are many, many film and TV podcasts. And as much as I like film and TV podcasts, this isn't one of them. But we're going to open this episode with a story about a movie anyway. That movie is Logan Lucky. And it was made by one of my favorite directors, Steven Soderbergh. He made the Ocean's 11 franchise, Aaron Brockovich, Traffic, and many other great films, and he is known for his very independent approach. Logan Lucky is a fun movie to watch, two thumbs up, but again, I'm not here to talk about the movie. I want to talk about how it was made. Like I said, Steven Soderbergh is known for his fierce independence, and in fact, he had actually retired from filmmaking because of his frustration with the whole studio system. So to make his comeback, he would only do it on his own terms in order to have full creative control of Logan Lucky. What's interesting is how he did it. Soderbergh had to cut out the studios from the financing equation, which meant he had to raise money to make the film through some unconventional methods, even by independent film standards. To raise the money to produce the film, he sold off all the foreign distribution rights, as well as the post-theatrical rights, for example, HBO, Netflix, On Demand, and other outlets. And he also got creative with the marketing and advertising to save a few more dollars. The net effect was that the production essentially was going to break even once it made it to theaters. But at that point, every ticket sold became money in the bank, no strings attached. Now, Steven Soderbergh is one of the most commercially and critically successful directors of his generation. And it's not like just anyone with a clever business plan can make a successful film. But what I like about this story is it's a story about how an industry so well known for its larger-than-life personalities and powerful studios and its place in our culture is a story that's not yet done being told. And the same could be said for big brands and manufacturers cutting across a whole other industry. Since the massive disruptions unleashed by the internet in the 90s, many industry stories have been full of plot twists, surprise endings, and even bad sequels, which brings us to this episode's topic, one of the most interesting class of e-commerce startups, the direct-to-consumer brand. Think about Warby Parker, Casper Mattress, Dollar Shave Club, countless others. With a smart product, contract manufacturing, a smart supply chain, and of course, a brilliant social media presence, direct-to-consumer or DTC brands are getting attention of not just consumers, but the big brands and manufacturers as well. So why is DTC important? Is it just about cutting out the middleman? There's much more going on, and that's why we're excited about this episode. Really excited about our guest today, John Bostock, co-founder and CEO of Truman's, the coolest cleaning company on the internet, and author of the book, The Elephant's Dilemma, Break Free and Reimagine Your Future at Work, which to me, is a story about change and transformation and why we're really excited to talk to you today, John. Good morning.
Good morning. It's incredible to be talking with you. It's such a dynamic time in the world.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons, right? but a time to think about, you know, really to be ready for change and transformation, right? It's something we talk a lot about with our clients about, you know, how you maintain a sense of agility while, you know, you serve your customers today at the same time. What are some of the forces you see kind of affecting your business today?
Yeah, look, I think from a macro perspective, the world has been moving faster and faster. And as we look forward, it's only going to move faster and it's only going to be more complex. We think about the issues we face, whether it's gun violence, whether it's environmental issues or pandemics, like what we're in the middle of. The world moves faster and we're faced with more complex challenges. And so if you think about business and how it translates, we all have to think about how our customers are impacted by it. We have large organizations that are no longer working in central offices and they have challenge associated with just making work work in the way that it always has. We have consumers who are now spending more time at home and who have different needs. So I think as we look at the world, just from a pure macro perspective, what we see is rapid change that had been happening before COVID. And now that change has obviously accelerated at a pace that I don't think any of us have seen. And I frankly don't know that we're even ready for the pace at which change will occur in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, it's been an amazing year. I think from our perspective too, as a digital focused organization, there are things that some of the clients we have just in terms of maintaining business continuity, which was a term that we talked about and around things like Y2K, right? Or what happens if I lose power today? There's a continuity plan, but this is way beyond continuity. And I think the idea of the rapid adoption of digital practices, the rise of conference calls, and we're doing this over a conference call, right? This is just the new normal. We've heard it a million times, but just wouldn't even be possible without the technologies and practices that were put in today. And I wonder, John, when you started Truman's back in the day, this is maybe a type of business where you maybe had to do a lot to sort of build a retail network or a distribution channel. And we used to call it disintermediation. Today, we might classify that as a DTC or a direct-to-consumer brand. How do you build that brand? How do you penetrate a whole market with nothing but a good idea and a website? Pandemics notwithstanding, like, how do you conceive that? And, how do you leverage those options that brands didn't have 15, 20 years ago?
Yeah, it's really a great question. And when you think about Truman's and our growth thesis, it's centered in on the world becoming more digital. And when you think about the challenges and some of the opportunities that come with being digital, it really begs the question of why we design products in a certain way, why we design services in a certain way. And ultimately, what we saw when we looked at the cleaning category specifically was a category that in some ways was ready for digital and others was not. So on one hand, you could certainly sell products online. And I think what most people assume is that legacy products, the way that they're designed, will ultimately translate to a good business model via digital platforms. The bottom line is they don't. And you take a category like spray cleaning. A great example of a spray cleaning product is Windex. You can all picture that blue bottle sitting on the shelf. That makes no sense in the digital world. And the reason why it makes no sense in the digital world is because someone ultimately is buying a product to be shipped to their home. And you're right. The greatest definition of consumer products as it relates to digital is direct to consumer. And so what that means is someone interacts with a company directly. Those products are shipped from a factory or from a distribution center directly to the home. And so you take a product like Windex that's 98% water, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And so as the market converts to being more digital, which ultimately means you're not going into a retail environment, and that retail environment traditionally had been a central hub. And so in the old world, it was efficient to move products that may contain 98% water to a central point and allow for consumers to drive there and pick them up. But in the new world, where products are decentralized in terms of the way that you can learn about them, decentralized in the way that the products end up on your doorstep, they need to be designed for the digital economy. And they need to be designed to not only move efficiently through the supply chain, but ultimately make sense and not create a burden on not only the supply chain, but the environment. So we really looked at Truman's as an opportunity to reimagine what the supply chain could be in a digital first economy. And I think more companies need to do it. I think what companies often fail to do is to look at digital holistically. I bring up the example of Windex. You can't just sell it online. There's one variable within digital that I think works and about 10,000 that don't. And so digital is much broader than simply creating a website and going to market. Now, look, creating a website and telling your story is a great way to gauge initial interest. And we certainly did that. But creating a sustainable direct-to-consumer business extends way beyond what the average company believes it to do.
So, John, that's a dimension I hadn't thought of, because I think a lot of CPG companies, a lot of consumer-facing companies, they really, not to pick on anyone, but they really do see their challenge as an awareness, as a share of market, as a marketing-only challenge. And I think we find a lot of clients who do just that. How do I put a little more creativity? How do I build the right campaign? You know, how do I get, you know, the end caps, what they need to be? How do I drive my field sales force and my reps the right way? But, you know, that's all sales and marketing. And I think the thing that really stuck out with me is how you design the product. I don't think that everyone's really thinking that way. The design of the product itself and the experience that the consumer is going to have with that product is really just as important as the marketing. And that's something you're leveraging. I hadn't thought about that. So that's fascinating. How do you go about doing that? One of the things that we talk about is, you know, we just listen to the customers. And if we knew all about our customers, how much of that success in Truman's just came from listening to your customers?
You need to think holistically about who the customer is. And for us, we think about the customer being the end use consumer. We think about the customer being the retailer. We think about the customer being the supply chain partners. And ultimately, what we ask ourselves is, what is the way to drive efficiency and improve efficacy? So look, we sell cleaning products. The cleaning products need to work really well. At the same point, what needs to happen is they need to make economic sense for our supply chain partners. So they need to be easier to move. They need to move faster. They need to be able to move through the supply chain with obviously less friction from a speed perspective, but less friction from an environmental perspective. We really think holistically about it. For the end use consumer, here's what they want. They want products to be delivered efficiently to their home that work really, really, really well at a great price. And ultimately, what it comes down to is the best way to deliver that. Now, the best way in today's world to deliver convenience is through digital platforms. I think overall, what we've seen over the last decade is the companies that grow the fastest and provide the most economic value are those that really understand digital and really understand how to use it as a competitive advantage at every single step. And so for us, that meant designing a better product that worked better for the supply chain, ultimately translated to a product that works better, is a great price, and ultimately provides a great customer experience. So, you know, I think, again, it's this holistic view of the category, and it starts all the way upstream from a manufacturing perspective to really imagine what the variables are that drive success in a digital economy. Because look, if you solve it for the digital economy first, you can always make it work for traditional retail. And the reason why is because traditional retail is easier. You're flowing through a centralized, well-developed model. The model that is harder to figure out is the model that is decentralized. How do you get from factory to home as efficiently as possible? That is best facilitated by digital platforms, whether they're the ability to communicate more efficiently from the customer buying on your website to a 3PL, or whether it's the 3PL communicating with a factory, allowing for digital platforms to really improve scale, to improve speed, to reduce friction. It's ultimately the way we're going to move the market forward. And as I said in the beginning, you know, it's only getting more complex, and it's only moving faster, and consumer expectations are just increasing. And so you have to define what it is you're trying to accomplish and then build systems to improve it, improve scale, make it more cost effective. And to my knowledge in my career, as I look back, I think the most transformative event has been what digital platforms and technology has done to improve products and services.
John, you were at GE for a long time. You were also at Big Ass Fans, which is a great brand name, by the way. And I'm searching for a home project to be able to install one just for that reason. But how did that work prepare you for this? Because I think GE has some great systems in place and a great heritage, and the holistic element of what you're talking about is fantastic. I'd love to hear it. But how did you get to that realization? How did that work early in your career set you up for that and for the success?
I think it was, and look, I wrote a book on this, right? I wrote a book about about starting at a big company and then taking leaps forward to solve a lot of these big challenges we face, and ultimately ask myself, what did I learn from GE, and how do I translate that to making a bigger impact? As I look at my career at GE and ultimately why I developed a great appreciation and understanding of really disruptive go-to-market strategies. I started in a legacy business within GE Plastics, moved to another business that had been more of a legacy structure, GE Water, and then went to GE Appliances. And I think what was really eye-opening at GE Appliances was the speed at which the market was changing. You had not only the convergence of digital platforms like Amazon, you had technology integrated into products to ultimately improve the customer experience, whether it be through apps on your iPhone or experiences via the web to either set up delivery or really improve the overall experience. And then I ended up leaving GE Appliances and going to GE Corporate, and at that time, really saw disruption front and center. And worked in a very fantastic forward-thinking group led by Beth Comstock, first female vice chair of GE. And ultimately, what she believed is that GE, in order to transform itself, needed to rethink how it went to market and became much quicker, more agile, much more like a startup. And so we looked at a lot of startups, and we looked at the characteristics of those startups, what made them special, what made them move faster, and what we learned is that a lot of them were using technology in new ways. And so when you start a company from zero and you're able to use technology in the marketplace that allows you to move faster, it's readily available. But a lot of times these companies like GE Appliances that have been around for decades aren't able to move fast because they have legacy systems in place. And so the common theme that we saw is that younger companies with more innovative platforms could move faster, could transform and create economic value much more rapidly. And by the way, that learning gave me the confidence to take the leap, as you suggested, and leave GE to go to Big S Fan. And I think when I look back at why that made so much sense, I met the founder of the company. He had a very clear vision on setting the company up to be a company that could be around for 100 years. And what I observed was a company that was 20 years old, a company that needed to be restructured, but a company that had effectively a whiteboard. And that whiteboard would allow us to come in, rethink the way it's structured, improve profitability, set it up for a successful sale, which we did, and then allow the company to mature and grow beyond the founder. And so I think that, you know, ultimately it was the learning of being in legacy businesses, working my way through GE, ultimately ending up in a place where I could be very open to learning about what the defects were within GE as a whole, but also in a position where I could look out and see what was making other companies successful. I think it was a defining time. As I said, taking leaps are difficult. Being in legacy businesses and wanting to do something different is hard. But ultimately, I think going through that learning evolution helped me. And I think going to Big Ass Fans, accomplishing what I did there and selling the company, we were able to then develop the confidence. And when I say we, my co-founder and I, he was at Big Ass Fans with me. We then created Trumit. So I think we're always learning. I think we're always adapting. I think we're always looking at what happens in the marketplace, but oftentimes there's no better way to learn than being in environments that don't work well. And I think it's fair to look back at GE and say a lot of those legacy customers were not set up to be fast moving digital first environments, and it would take a long time to get them there. And so I think it really speaks to not only the need to transform and the need to move as fast as the market is moving, but also the need to prepare for it and the need to really think critically about what you do well, what you don't do well, and how you're best positioned to win.
John, you had a phrase in there about the whiteboard. Everyone needs a whiteboard. I love that. There's so much more depth to that than the literal whiteboard. Kind of looking to the future then, you know, we're seeing a lot of experimentation with DTC offers, direct-to-consumer offers, from traditional manufacturers, even kind of getting out of their normal categories, even beyond some of their adjacent categories. How do you see the future of the GEs, the big CPG companies, evolving with that type of experimentation and with sort of the models that you guys have built? What does that future look like?
To me, it's very clear. Now, look, I think we could talk for 5 hours and debate whether that future will be realized. But what I see as I look out is distribution matters, but distribution matters in the digital form. And I think as we look at business over the last 3-4 decades, what was front and center was rooted in physical distribution. And if you think about the strength of Walmart or Target over the last 3-4 decades, what really informed their strength in the big box category was their ability to put physical stores in the right location and have a great assortment of products. That can be done online. And frankly, those products can reach the consumer more efficiently. And as we think about physical and we think about digital, I think what's very, very clear is that distribution ultimately will be done via a digital platform. So what I mean is the consumer will ultimately buy and receive the product in a direct manner. Now, it could be from a brand. So if you take GE Appliances, GE Appliances is sold through stores like Home Depot or Lowe's today. I really believe that in the future, consumers are going to buy from GE. And ultimately, the physical aspect will be experience. And if you think about the reasons to believe in what I'm saying, think about a Whole Foods and think about all the product that sits on the shelf. The reality is that it is much smarter to have a single distribution hub in a city that is delivering product that is sitting on a decentralized Whole Foods shelf. And then if you say, well, what is the purpose of a Whole Foods? Well, the purpose of a Whole Foods would be experiential. So if you want to learn to cook, if you want to learn about new items, go into that environment and learn. But physical should not be the point of distribution. It should be the point of experience. And so for me, what I believe is physical outlets, and I'm talking consumer products right now, physical outlets will be experience-based. The transaction will be run by a brand. Now, look, if Home Depot and Walmart and Target, if all of the traditional legacy retailers stay front and center and can continue to offer products directly to consumers, fantastic. Now, they're going to have to rework their supply chain to do so. But you will see brands that ultimately need to drive their products through a new supply chain that is more efficient, that ultimately creates more value to the consumer through better experience. That's going to be in a direct manner, period. And if the brands want a more formal, more structural, physical environment, it has to be experiential. There is no other way to differentiate itself. So I really look forward, and what I see are products and services being designed to be more direct. I see products and services designed to integrate much easier with other products and services that exist within your personal ecosystem. Mainly, those products and services need to connect through technology and other digital solutions. We see that more and more with the devices in our home. You know, I think the market, as I said, is just changing rapidly. And I think that for any brand who looks out and says, over the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to create meaningful connections, they can't rely on legacy distribution models. They need to rethink and reinvent. So I think the future is very clear. And I think that ultimately what you're going to see our brands really emerge with a new voice, a new value proposition, and I think it's driven by consumer behavior. I think more and more consumers expect to be able to find the right product at the right price and have it delivered to their home as efficiently as possible.
That really resonates and I think adds up with a lot of trends we're seeing. And I think you're right, we could go at least 5 hours debating or discussing what's possible in the future. Let me just wrap up with one last quick question, John. If there was one thing you could tell brands today, what would it be?
I think that brands cannot sit back and assume that the love for them will carry forward. I think brands need to constantly recreate, rethink, and reinvent themselves. I think the market is moving so fast, and I think the narrative shift so fast that if we assume that the equity that we've built over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years will carry forward, we're wrong. Ultimately, what consumers and really buyers in general have is the greatest opportunity we've ever had, which is the ability to learn about new products and services very easily. There literally is no friction in terms of learning what the competitive landscape looks like, what the differentiating points are. So brands really need to innovate faster than they ever have before. They need to rethink what the consumer experience will be like in the next 5 to 10 years. And I think brands need to assume that we're only going to face greater challenges and we're only going to move faster. And I think if you sit back and you take that into account, and then you truly believe that anything is possible, ultimately what you can do is continue to move your brand forward, constantly reinvent it, and constantly create extraordinary value, not only for the consumer, but the stakeholders. And ultimately, the stakeholders will look at the company and believe that it's doing the right thing, and it's moving forward in the way that keeps pace with the market, but also continues to provide extraordinary value.
That's fantastic stuff, John, really inspiring. And you know what's great is that this is advice and direction that you've earned. You've been there. And I really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Yeah, loved it. Love the work that you all are doing and super appreciative of working together to tell our story.
Awesome. Take care, John. Now it's time for our namesake segment. What if, so what, and most important, now what? Kim, John had so much to say, and I know this topic is close to you. I want to get your reaction right away. What did you hear? What did you think?
I thought it was great. And he put some finer points on the whole DTC model that I hadn't quite worked out in my own brain. So the first thing that really stood out to me was his whole notion of digital first across product marketing and distribution. Ground truth, it costs a lot to ship heavy products. And anyone in any commerce business knows, you know, freight costs, it's part of their budget. And it really just put that finer point on from the product development route to distribution, thinking about this notion of digital first, of developing products for digital distribution, I thought was awesome. I really like the idea that this type of thinking could really revolutionize product development thinking approaches. It could really drive a lot of innovation in the industry for ultimately the good of the customer. I really liked the idea that this idea of the physical outlets being the experience. So he talked about Whole Foods as an example, and that, you know, ultimately the transaction is still going to be owned by the brand, but using the physical outlets as a way to really experience the brand and get to know the product and try it out. I think that's really a great way to think about it. And then ultimately, it's just this notion that the consumer is in control. That's really the underlying of DTC in general, but the consumer being in control of their experience with the brand at the end of the day, whether it's online or in a physical location. I think that's really important.
When he was sort of describing it, and I was trying to, you know, I was hearing this, and I was thinking about, you know, all my own sort of consumer preferences and what control I have as a consumer. But, you know, I was kind of surprised. He talked about change, right? Change is happening faster. And we've been hearing that forever. But when he framed this up and he sort of laid out the logic to me, I thought, why hasn't this sort of revolution happened even 10 or 15 years ago? You know, so I think obviously with, you know, a lot of circumstances is, you know, in 2020, you know, have driven a lot of change. But I love this term that he used, a growth thesis for his own brand. And I think that's a growth thesis that I think a lot of manufacturers and brands are going to have to think about, because I think he's dead on. Like, just the change that happened in 2020 and is going to accelerate a lot of other change. You know, it's something that we kind of know, Kim, and we see with a lot of our clients is digital is so much more than just building a website and going to market. You know, I wish it were that easy. I might have retired a long time ago. But in fact, I think there was some research around DTC brands that when they launch, they attract sort of like an early following and they sort of cap out. You know, I think part of that probably can be attributed to sort of the limited thinking, right? Like, I just get this website out there, I'm going to get going. So, you know, he definitely laid out sort of a growth thesis that I think was pretty compelling for a lot of brands to listen to.
Yeah, I agree. And I think while there are platforms now today, like Shopify, that make it easier to get to market quicker, if you don't have those business fundamentals, you're going to fail. And that ties right back to, it's not just a website. There's so much more to think about.
Well, that kind of takes us, Kim, to our three big questions. And I don't want to start us off this episode with what if. So we've got a compelling growth thesis. We got a sort of a blueprint laid out. That's our what if. And I like to think about this what if in terms of what's in it for the customers. Like what if you could employ these tactics and the strategy? What would it mean to your customers? It's a better shopping experience, you know, a better sort of brand experience, a little more transparency and confidence in the product. Certainly the case with Truman's, you know, just the nature of the category and the way they've designed the product, which is really gets to a lot of other, I think, values that clients have around that they really sort of transcend the brand itself, apply some social proof and environmental responsibility. It really gets to just the economics of it. Like ultimately, you know, the economics are that you don't want to ship water or to a retailer. And I think that eventually, speaking of water, all water always finds the efficient route. I think that's going to apply to a consumer benefit as well, certainly in terms of cost beyond just the experience with the brand. And, you know, I just love the idea of choice and freedom and, again, building that direct relationship with the customer. I think that benefits not just the brand. That's a benefit for the customer. And I think a lot of brands, when they think about what could be and what if, start to think about those benefits for the customer. So Kim, so what? What if you could do that? Then what?
So from the business angle, there's a lot to deal with there. It's fundamentally a cultural change. If you are, you know, endeavoring a DTC business, or if you're truly a startup, there's so much to consider. Not even dealing with that brand as message that you talked about. I think from a business, though, there's a lot of capabilities that you need to develop, a lot of benefits. So a direct relationship with your customer, you know, you're going to own that data. That data is going to allow you to have deeper insights that you have complete control over how you want to action on. Lower cost and product development experimentation, thinking with that product development digital first mindset. Certainly greater control over the supply chain, transparency into your supply chain. And just so that notion of legacy physical relationships, this ability to leverage existing retail partnerships in new ways, or think about how you deploy physical experiences in new ways. And ultimately, dealing with all of these, working all these capabilities out, that's going to ensure, it's going to give you an edge, let's say, for survival over brands that aren't dealing with these capabilities.
Kim, that's a great so what, but now what?
Right. So what can you do as a business today? I think, you know, DTC is all about driving deeper and more meaningful relationships with your customer. Even if you aren't a DTC brand, you can still follow that model. You still glean the benefits of that model. So I think, you know, if you could do anything today, think about all the approaches you're currently using to build customer relationships now. What else could you be doing to be more relevant to them so you are top of mind for them? It could be as easy as adding a feature to your digital presence to gather data. It could be actually talking to a subset of your customers to better understand what you could do better for them. There are always opportunities to drive those relationships deeper. It just takes a little bit of assessment and figuring out where there's opportunity.
Kim, that was great. I really appreciate it. Great insight and a great now what for this episode. So I want to thank John Bostock for joining us and sharing his insights and his history. And Kim, as always, thank you. And we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to What If So What with Jim Hertzfeld and Kim Williams-Chopek. Subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss a single episode. You can find this season along with show notes at Perficient.com. We're also on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Google, and other major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.